ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to another exciting episode of Amelia's Weekly Fish Fry. I'm Amelia Dalton, and folks, this week we're not going to be talking about yet another low-power MCU, some new fandangled FRAM memory, or even how IoT is going to save the world. Again, no, this here fish fry is all about money. Nelson Mandela once said, "Money won't create success. The freedom to make it will." But where is that freedom found in our motley EE crew? In the startups. Innovation happens in our basement labs, in those fabled garages, in the Palo Alto Starbucks. That's a story for another time. This week, my guest is a powerhouse of the EDA industry. He's been a mentor to many and an angel to even more. His name is Lucho Lanza. Maybe you don't know his name, or maybe you've only heard it in passing, but you are undoubtedly aware of his impact. This year, he was honored with the 2014 Phil Kaufman Award for Distinguished Contributions to Electronic Design Automation. But really, this award represents much more than just a couple signed checks and conference calls amongst friends. You see, Lucho was raised in EE. He came to Intel from the Olivetti Corporation in Italy in 1977. From there, he moved to early EDA company Daisy Systems. Remember them? And then in 1986, found his way to the role of CEO of EDA Systems. Since his days as CEO of EDA Systems Incorporated, Lucho has been an EDA consultant, venture partner, and general partner at U.S. Venture Partners, the managing director of Lanza Tech Ventures, chairman of the board of PDF Solutions, and has even served on the board of directors of several private companies. Beyond all of his awards, accolades, and various business cards lies a man who believes in being kind. Lanza believes in the little guys, the startups, the folks with innovation in their hands, in their algorithms, and in their souls. I am proud to welcome Lucho to Fish Fry. Listen closely, my friends. You may learn a thing or two. Hi, Lucho. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you for being here. That's a pleasure to meet you in person.
So, I know you've been involved with, in one capacity or another, a whole lot of startups through the years. Now, what do you think the role of the startup is in EDA, and why do you think it's important to fund them?
That's an interesting question. I like to answer in a little set of splits.
Okay.
What was the role of the startup in EDA? What has been in the past?
Yeah.
EDA is, we like when we walk in places to feel big.
Yeah.
It's the EDA industry. There is no EDA industry. It's a small segment of this that has been fundamentally the semiconductor industry. I would say the general system design was occupied by EDA. By what used to be called CAE workstations, then became design automation. The role of EDA can be explained, if you think to the Moore's Law. I went back and I looked to the Moore's Law article. I had to go back and look at it because I really wanted to find out, but I didn't remember exactly what was saying.
Yeah.
That was, as Gordon Moore used to say, it was a marketing article. It was not a technical article.
Yeah.
As obvious, if you read the title, it was cramming transistors. Ain't a technical article, right. A scientific article. But the point is, if the Moore's Law gets verified and continues going, that law presents a challenge to people that design. Because if you have doubling or tripling, whatever number you want, the number of transistors you have to design, you don't want to double the time or double the cost.
Right, yeah.
So if the number of things that you have to put together is growing exponentially, you have to find a way that the cost of putting each of them together goes down exponentially.
Right.
Now, I'm not going to be perfectly the same, but yeah. The challenge is, if this industry is capable of providing complexity incredibly growing, incredibly, somebody has to say, well, okay, We will do something so that the next system is not going to be out of whack and out of the world in terms of cost of designing and time to design. So the consequence of the Moore law, there is an EDA challenge that is, please make the next system possible. It used to be the next chip, and now we call it the next system. Since the speed of growth of the semiconductor industry was going so fast, people wanted to use the next generation of the semiconductor as quick as possible. Now, so happens that this, the change in the semiconductor process itself, coming up with the next node, was a couple of years. With the increasing complexity of the software that was created, saying that, okay, the new node comes, and in 2 years I will give you the new version of the software, and we're going to work right off the bat. Welcome. It's going to work perfect, my friend.
Right.
It's impossible. Yeah. Wouldn't happen. On the other side, if I am designing a very complex chip, I don't mind that your software is not perfect. It's okay, okay? So just give me the damn software. I want
right.
it. I want it as soon as possible. That is really stopping. It's the bottleneck for me to get this system out, get this chip out. So the push on the big established EDA companies will give me the best you can, as quick as you can, because I need to design something more complex than yesterday. And give it to me that is faster than yesterday, that is better than yesterday, is attacking processes characteristic on yesterday. So all this is the challenge. So I give you that tool, the probability that the tool works perfectly out of the box is zero.
Yeah.
0.00.
Right.
Guaranteed will not. As a result, the large EDA companies had to be very much hand-holding the new designs, and most of their R&D, if not all of their R&D, was just there to be sure that these customers, these people that are designing new stuff, will be satisfied.
Yeah.
When you are doing that, saying, and by the way, I will also innovate, okay? Try five different ways of doing new things. I'm going to try to do absolute new stuff nobody thought about. Doesn't work.
No.
Cannot do it.
Yeah.
Either you're delivering something and you're going to be serving the customer appropriately in something that was already complex to deliver, or you're going to do something different. So what happened is that the large guys were doing the first, that was the most important thing, keep things going, and creative people would do the new things that we didn't see. And say, okay, well, but that's maybe we should do it this way. Maybe we should increase the level of abstraction. Maybe we should change the way we're doing verification. We should do hardware simulation. So everybody will come up with something. That was the role of the startup. Do the things that are new requirements that large guys cannot do because they're already a very difficult job in keeping up with the speed and the complexity of the standard stuff.
Yeah.
Now, and then people say, well, today you don't need startups anymore. Well, point is, you still need it. And the reason why you think you don't need it anymore is because unless the fundamental technological demand is slowing down significantly, it's because you are narrowing your focus. The startups in EDA have been incredibly prosperous. We don't call them startups in EDA. We call them IP companies. It's absolutely the same thing.
Yeah.
And the point is, if you keep focused on what you have and you try to deny that other people and other community are coming in to help meeting the challenge, then you don't see it. To meet the challenge of designing a more complex chip or system, you have to make the design of the chip, practically speaking, an assembly of EDA blocks. IP blocks in EDA. So you have to assemble the IP blocks. It's something that is very challenging. Changes the level of abstraction to work on. Changes lots and lots of stuff. Some people have to do the IP, some people do the physical IP, some people do the verification of the IP, some people do tools that put together the IP. Wow, there's plenty of stuff. The other aspect is, therefore, startup going to do that? Yes. There is another corner of your question that might require to be put focus on. That is, why you don't have so many VCs investing in these things anymore? Well, because what VCs are, they are not risk takers. They are fundamentally smart people that see things and they're trying to be sure that what they see is real. They don't think it's very high risk when they do it.
Right.
From their point of view, for a VC to invest, they look at which areas are the most demanding and the most likely to return.
Sure.
So it's a competitive field. It's not that you cannot make profit or make good investment in EDA. There are other areas where you can invest much better, much better. This makes the EDA investment not as attractive, comparatively speaking, than other investments in social networks. Sure. And therefore you feel like, well, we're slowing down, we're not there, there's no creativity anymore. I disagree significantly.
So based on all of this, your knowledge of the industry, your knowledge of startups through the years, where do you think EDA is headed in the future?
What new systems will be designed? And do we have all the capabilities, the methodology, the blocks to design those systems in the reasonable time at the reasonable price? Mm-hmm. That's the question to ask.
Yeah.
How many different dimensions might be impacting the complexity of the system that will be designed? If you want to see it, you should not look at these things incrementally. You don't see significant changes incrementally. Nothing changes incrementally. One of the vision I have is, think if the processor could be considered in the future what the transistor or the gate was considered 50 years ago. I remember the first radio I had was 6 transistors.
Mm-hmm.
6. So instead of having 10 processors in a system, you have 100,000 processors. Mm-hmm. So you're going to design it incrementally? Oh, 100,000, okay. I know how to do one processor. I didn't want to do two processors. 100,000, same thing. Of course not. Because you've got a completely different way of doing things. If you think about the system itself, if you have that computing power, think what you do with the data there. Think how much smarter that thing can be in making interpretation of the data. Having methodologies, tools, help in designing more and more complex learning machines.
Mm-hmm.
That is not going to happen overnight.
No.
So if you look from a system point of view, it's clear there are going to be very, very significant changes. Which one will happen first? I don't know. Which one will happen? I don't know. Do I think that if it's not exactly what I said, there's going to be something else that I didn't see? I'm positive.
Yeah.
And you look at the thing, and this is just looking at the system side, the top side, but look at the bottom. The bottom is as interesting. Everybody talks about Internet of Things. What does it really mean? What it means, things would become active on the internet. Things.
Mm-hmm.
Does it mean that things become active on the internet? Well, the first thing you have to think, to become active, they have to become somehow citizens. And probably to become active and be perceived, they have to become electronically meaningful. Every time you say something becomes electronically meaningful, somebody will say, how do I take that and I may end up put it into a computer?
Mm-hmm.
So I need to have a new interface. I need to have a new sensor.
Yeah.
That wasn't there yesterday because the thing wasn't part of the internet yesterday.
Right.
So the new thing requires a new circuit. Somebody's to design the circuit. Ain't going to happen magically.
Right.
So you're going to have a ton of requirements on designing new circuits, new devices, new little gadgets that are going to be pervasive.
Mm-hmm.
And that is an incredible challenge.
Yeah.
The bottom is going to be challenged on the IP side. The IP is also going to do the same thing at the top. So there's going to be challenges on the methodology, challenges on the IP, challenges the way you block, you put the blocks together, you connect them together, you make it easy to do the next generation. It's still all there.
Mm-hmm.
Still all there. And that's what creative people should be thinking, because this is just the beginning. Once you increase the community of designers in a different way,
yeah,
they think another thing. That is, do I think, therefore, all these people are going to get out of bed in the morning and they're all going to go and work in this building somewhere in the middle of China? I don't think so. I think so. So there's going to be a lot of things to think about the way the industry will really change.
Yeah.
And once you do that, then you have to stop and breathe.
Right.
Because the complexity of what you're looking at is huge. Mm-hmm. And you don't want to get more definition on that.
Right.
Strategy is not to define more details on the far future. It's to keep a vision of the future and keep modifying it based on what you see today. Don't nail it. If you nail a strategy, it's not a strategy anymore. It's a tactic. It's an execution. Don't nail it.
Excellent. Well, let me ask your off-the-cuff question. We're here in your office, and you have just an incredible amount of beautiful books all around me. I know you're a book collector, so what are your favorite books that you own?
Oh, God. I like books in Italian, Latin. I like books in ancient Greek.
Yeah.
I like all the English books. I mean, there's probably some good Shakespeare you can see.
Uh-huh. I see some over there.
Somehow, the books I end up liking the most are the furthest back in time.
Okay, yeah.
And the reason why I think I like them the most, and I've been moving in that direction, is that I've seen a vision of the press. It's a combination of technical and social. The press has been one of the few examples I have of enormous horizontal technology impact has changed every aspect of society. Mm-hmm. Every aspect. Has changed the way you interact. Mm-hmm. It's changed the way you look at authority. It's changed the way you question authority.
True.
It's changed the way you keep things in your mind.
Mm-hmm.
Just think about that when the press wasn't there, the best way to remember, to do things and keep it in your mind was memory.
Yeah.
The press comes and people did not do the same exercise in memory. They wouldn't. There would not be a reason. So look at the internet. You don't need the books anymore.
Mm.
You need nothing, just Google it. Search. So I look at the press as something that really changed society dramatically. So which book do I like the most? The Oldest.
Well, that's all I have time for today. Thank you so much for joining me. This was so cool.
Thank you again.
Now, folks, let's talk just for a second about another extremely fun, money-filled process. Semiconductor quoting. Oh, wait. That's not really fun. At all. Actually, well, we would tell you the price of that component, but maybe we'll just wait until you tell us how much you have to spend. Oh, wait, you missed signature page 403, so we're gonna need you to fax that back again. Yeah, we've all been there. Semiconductor pricing can be, well, let's just say, time-consuming and kinda stupid at times. But what if we put it all in the cloud? Took away the handshakes, backroom deals, and Gulf tea treaties. Okay, that's stretching it a bit. We're gonna have that stuff somewhere, sometime, right? But what about the actual, how much does this wafer on this die with this process and this, that, and the other thing actually cost? Bring in eSilicon. They've been using this technology in-house for quite some time, and now it's ready for prime time. Are you ready? You can join me, yes, me, this very instant for another episode of On the Scene, and watch as Bill Isaacson from eSilicon gets us a semiconductor quote in about 3 minutes. The whole kit and caboodle, well, minus the signature part, and I'd be ready to roll. You can watch this brand new episode of On the Scene by heading to the front page of eejournal.com. It's right there, middle column, can't miss it. You can also head on over to youtube.com and search for EE Journal. And even further, you can head on over to facebook.com/EE Journal and check out all sorts of other cool stuff. If Twitter is your thing, you can check us out at EE Journal TFM and Google Plus. Well, yes, we're there as well. But are you? That's the question. Also, by clicking the links below the player on eejournal.com, you can download our Fish Fryin' RSS feed and subscribe to Fish Fry via the iTunes Store. And remember, if you want any further information about the stories covered in today's show, head on over to eejournal.com and look for this week's Fish Fryin' page. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you know of any cool new technology, any fun EE conference coming up that I absolutely should attend, or perhaps the best geeky hotspot in your city, shoot me a line at amelia@eejournal.com or post a comment on our forums on EE Journal. For the week of December 19th, 2014, I'm Amelia Dalton, and you've been fried.